All right, well, I did my best, but I cannot drag you idiots kicking and screaming into the 21st century. You're just so caught up in ruling over your rotten little fiefdom that you don't even see the world that has sprouted up all around you. All right, well, enjoy broadcasting your cave paintings to the last remaining savages who are still watching over the air broadcasting. The rest of the world, they've moved to the cloud, and it is fucking gorgeous up there.
Corey, if you'll excuse us, we have a television network we need to fix.
Well, get out that super glue. Do you really think that's what all this is about, your little television network? This is a battle for the soul of the universe.
This is the Extra Hot Grape Podcast, episode 373 for the week of September 20th, 2021. I am yet another streaming service, David T. Cole, and I'm here with Gelato of Mortification, Sarah D. Bunting.
It's called feminism. Look it up.
3 a.m. alarm, Tara Ariano.
This is the life I chose.
And Venus rising from the clamshell, Christina Tucker.
We believe all victims forever and ever to the end of time.
Welcome to Extra Hot Great for another week. Joining us, she's a guest you've heard with us before. She is the co-host of the podcast, Wait, Is This a Date? Per her contract writer, I am required to say she puts the L in LGBTQ. It's Christina Tucker!
Hey,
Christina!
Welcome back.
Yay!
My absolute buds.
Christina is also the author of a newsletter, Chaos, It's the New Cocaine, in which she is creating old-school television the pity-style recaps of season two of The Morning Show. And guess what? That is also the show she is here to discuss with us. Thank God.
And speaking of that newsletter, if you're not sold on the newsletter by the first graphic right at the top of it, there's no helping you.
It's true.
Graphic design, famously, is my passion, so...
So as we remember from talking about it when Apple TV Plus first launched almost 2 years ago, Jesus Christ, The Morning Show is set at and around a morning show at a fictional broadcast network called UBA. Veteran host Alex Levy, Jennifer Aniston, was rocked in the first season by the news that her longtime co-host Mitch Kessler, Steve Carell, was a sex pest. Then it came out he was also a literal rapist. His victim, Hannah Gugu Mbatha-Raw, died by suicide at the end of the first season, and Alex had a meltdown on camera next to Bradley Jackson, Reese Witherspoon, the relatively green co-host who replaced Mitch. Lots of other stuff happened. That's the short version. In the premiere, we rejoin everyone 8 months later, around the end of 2019. Alex has left the network and written a memoir. Bradley has a new co-host. Eric, I have in my notes Aaron, because until I watched more episodes, I thought that was his name. It's Eric, played by Hasan Minhaj. And in her spare time, has been a good soldier for UBA, hosting a show called Celebrity Bowling that we tragically do not see in the premiere. Executive Corey, Billy Crudup, has been fired and rehired, but whoops, UBA's evening news anchor is also a monster, and they're going to need to replace him right away. Bradley pitches herself, but is she more important to the morning show? Is Aaron... or Eric may be the right choice for the evening show? And if so, whom will they pair Bradley with? I bet you have a pretty good guess. Only one episode has dropped so far. Apple's being very strict about their embargo, like they would not even let anyone publish reviews until the day of the premiere. So although some of us have watched more, we will not give plot details about upcoming episodes. Let's do the Chen check-in. Christina, should our listeners watch The Morning Show?
Like, yes, but also no, but also yes. That's my take.
Sarah?
I mean, no, and yet yes, but mostly no, but also yes.
Dave?
Yes, and it's because it is a train wreck, but it's the best kind of train wreck. So yes.
I agree with Dave. Yes. If, like Marie Kondo, you love mess, The Morning Show is for you. So, Christina, let's start here. What is it about this show that literally compelled you to start your newsletter?
I mean, the thing that has grasped me by the heart and gut and all other internal organs kind of from the jump is its Funhouse mirror version of prestige TV. Mm-hmm. Like, it has all the ingredients. It's got all the actors. It looks incredible. And then every time someone makes a decision, says a line of dialogue, I am like, no, but I am actually at the circus. What's going on here? I find it thrilling that, like, this show A, can just continue to be made, God bless Apple's buckets of money, mm-hmm. and that they have no idea how normal humans react in any circumstance, context. No reasoning is consistent from episode to episode, nay, from scene to scene. It's just fully gonzo, and I kind of have to admire and love that.
Yeah.
It is a show that wants to be the Today Show version of The West Wing, but really yes. what it should be aspiring to is the very small shift it would need to make to become the Today Show version of The Good Fight, which is what yes. it's almost at.
Yes.
But uh-huh. it thinks it's more important than that, and it's not. Mm-hmm. And some people know it, and some people don't. And it's that weird alchemy of Billy Crudup being like, oh, I know what show I'm in. And then like other people not knowing what show they're in. And it's mm-hmm. that clash that makes this show so weirdly compelling and bad yet good at the same time, depending on your appetite for messy train wreck television that is still entertaining.
Yeah, it doesn't realize it's a soap. It has such pretensions. Yeah. And since yeah. Dave's brought us there, this is going to be my last question. But let's just do it now. If we are giving out MVP and LVP awards for understanding the assignment, who gets what? Yeah. Christina?
I mean, obviously, Billy gets understood the assignment. I yeah. think mm-hmm. he, for some reason, is the only person who understands the assignment in the specific way that he understands it. I don't know what other notes any other actor has got on the show, but he gets it. Least... Honestly, I think it might be a tie between Jen and Reese at this point. I don't know what either of them are doing at any moment. Mm-hmm. And okay, like go off, ladies. We all Jen's highlights look incredible. There's that mm-hmm. at least.
Well, yeah, she's launching a hair care line, so they better. Sarah, your thoughts.
I would like to note that one of the things that makes this so watchable is that it is literally so watchable. Like everyone just looks so shiny and yeah, pretty.
So beautiful.
So beautiful. This is an extremely successfully manipulative show. Like, I have to respect, it's like when that 24-year-old waiter hits on you. But it's like, we both know what this is. But I respect it. Like, we're both professionals. Thank mm-hmm. you. Here is a tip. I feel hot. This show, MVP, definitely Billy Crudup. There's that one, scene, I think it's in a later episode, and I don't think this spoils anything, but they're panning across this extremely bonkers, like Budweiser after 9/11 commercial level manipulative announcement video package. Everyone else, as they're panning across, looks nauseated, and then naturally he is last and he looks thrilled. It's like you can hear him getting a boner. I mean, he is loving life as an actor. Least valuable player. I feel like in every scene, consecutive scene, Reese Witherspoon is trying something else from a yes. past role. Mm-hmm. And also, why is your accent so bad when you are a Southern? Like, yeah. decide to have it or not, and then don't have it on air and not have it. I don't know. But I mean, she also looks pretty. Not trying to sell it my birthday, mate. Yeah, this show, there's Sorkin-y speechifying there, like so much of it. There's this is not how people talk. I'm not enjoying the here we are in the run up to COVID.
Achoo.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my God. That yeah, just, I was both infuriated rough. And tickled by someone sneezing in the background. But it's so watchable. It's just Pringles. It's Pringles TV, but with swears. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I will keep watching it. I'm not happy to tell anyone that, but it's going to happen.
I don't see how anybody else except Billy Crudup can be the MVP here yeah. because he's obviously yeah. the one who understands where this property needs to be, even if it wasn't envisioned that way. So I would
he's
feel
the
like
Jason, you know who I mean.
I feel like the most least valuable player then would be probably like the producers or showrunners because, and then the solution would be to make Billy Crudup the showrunner or producer then because sure. obviously he's the one that most gets what the tone of the show really needs to be. So let him run with it a little bit. So I think the failure of missed opportunity lies with the producers then.
Mm-hmm. Agree about Billy Crudup, of course. In terms of least, I agree with everyone who said Reese Witherspoon, who is all over the friggin' map for the reasons that Dave said, but I'm also going to give an honorable, dishonorable mention to the whoever is playing Ty from the social team, whose job on the morning show, within the morning show, is to, like, go on the air and read tweets. But the actor also seems to think this is going to be his big break, and, like, sweetie, you're tall and cute, but no, this is not going to get you anywhere. No one cares who you are or what you do.
If most of your scenes are with Yanko, the weather guy, I'm sorry, babe.
That guy needs a spinoff. Like, Nestor Carbonell, I don't know what he has been told, but he is in a completely different show that's like that show starring Jim Carrey as the kids host, like, and there's tragedy lurking in every frame, like whenever he's even in the side of a scene, just like doing small talk on the set. Nestor Carbonell is like perfused with sadness. And it's what?
And I couldn't remember why. I was like, why are you so sad? Like, grow up.
I'm not sure there is anything that is canonically something that we even know. I think Carbonell is just like, well, nobody else seems to know what the fuck's going on, so I'm just going to do my own thing. Like, all right, Hamlet.
Yeah. He was with Belle Powley in the first season, who was like, that was the storyline where it was like, some people have workplace relationships that are consensual and that's okay. And then, like, with one line in the season 2 premiere, they're like, she's in grad school now. So I guess that's what he's sad about, that she's gone.
Oh,
like,
okay.
Yeah, I figured it was that, but I was like, I don't find that compelling. So right. I do not care.
Yeah, no one cares. Anyway. Sarah, I think we both remember how it felt last year when we were writing the 90210 book and we got to type end manuscript, as all authors do.
Somewhere Jane from the Bold Type said, wait, is that how you do it?
I do remember that. I also remember the conspicuous absence of a fireplace at my house that.
We had one, but I was not writing in front of it. But yes, I love how... Alex can tell her editor or agent or whoever is dancing around before giving her negative feedback. And then the second the feedback comes, Alex is like extremely defensive instantly. Even though what we've heard of this memoir is terrible. Christina, your thoughts?
Babe, it's bad. It's a weird use of like a Hans Christian Andersen kind of incorrectly interpreting the moral therein.
Incorrect reporting of the actual plot too, not for nothing.
And then she's like furious at her agent / editor / whomstever this woman is for being like, well, maybe if you include like a little bit more about your life, you can get ahead of this book that Marcia Gay Harden is writing. Mm-hmm. And she's like furious about that. And it's like, well, then, babe, why are you writing a memoir? Like, no one is making you write a memoir. Write something else, I guess. Yeah. Like, that's the point of them. I can't help you here. Mm-hmm. Go chop some wood, please.
Go chop some wood. Oh, please talk about that, because you singled this out for special commentary in your recap.
The thing about Jennifer Aniston is any role that asks her to do things with her hands, I find hilarious, because clearly that woman has never, even just typing, I was like, you don't type. You're not a typist. You don't know how to use a computer, Jen. That's fine. You've been famous since you were 24. I don't care. Asking me to believe that this woman is chopping her own wood, shut up. Like, don't talk to me like that. Thank you for giving it to me. It's deeply pornographic to me. But like, don't make me believe that she's heating her home with this wood. I'm not dumb.
I found that very frightening, actually, because it was like, I know we're supposed to be like, oh, ha ha. Like, and there's this meta thing where it's like, here's, you know, Rachel also like comedically trying to chop wood. But I was like, someone is going to be harmed. This is not good. Mm-hmm. I want this to stop. I have
thankfully she's all by herself. Mm-hmm. So just her and the dog, which she has a dog now. Yeah. Okay, fine, whatever. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Once she knew Maggie was writing this book, I don't know why. I truly don't know why she bothered. Like, this is obviously going to be the definitive book about these events. So, like, who cares? Anyway. Bradley is blonde now. Discuss. Sarah, you start us off.
I'm glad this would have, I feel like this would have happened in season one, but I guess season one was all supposed to have taken place over the course of like 10 minutes. So I guess they didn't have time.
Yeah, I think it's like 3 weeks.
Even though she wore definitely 5 to 7 wigs in that time because her hair was different from episode to episode. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And none of it was good. Like that reddish brown like that's old man's hair dye, and that's not what we're doing. So, I mean, she looks great, and I think Reese Witherspoon is, as far as she understands what she's supposed to be doing, doing a good job. Like, she also is very watchable. Unfortunately, in her case, it's because, I mean, her hair does look very nice now, but it's also because it's like, which show does she think she's in?
Right.
Now, where is she from in this scene? Oh, Eastern Kentucky. I see. but yeah, I was relieved that they just did that, because it would have, I mean, it's a morning show. This would have been taken care of fairly promptly, I feel.
Yeah.
Yeah. It makes more sense that she's blonde. It does concern me. Her character trait was being brunette. Like, that was kind of her defining. And I do feel in this season she has lost herself. She is no longer brunette. I don't know that she knows who she is.
Right.
I find it a little puzzling. Like, every action she makes, I'm like, well, why did you think that was going to work for you?
Yeah.
Why did you think yelling at Corey this? Like, I just, every character choice she makes does not track. And it's fine. Again, it's what I come here for. I missed it desperately. It's been 2 years. I'm so happy.
Yeah.
I'm a little concerned. And maybe it's the wig's fault. Maybe we need the wig back. I don't know.
Yeah, it is very weird how the decisions that seem to have been made by Reese Witherspoon before coming back, and she is a producer on the show too, do seem very like, here are things I want. I want to wear my regular blonde hair, and I want to sing in the premiere. And both those things happen. One of them we're happy about, and the other one is so strange.
Was she just like mad that Jen got to sing last season, and she was like, I must do it?
I would not rule that out.
I don't understand.
That's a reason. But that whole number, and then they're like, you know, because they're singing, she and Eric Aaron are singing What Are You Doing New Year's Eve, because they're hosting UBA's coverage, or like they're live from Times Square, Bloody Blue. But again, this is another thing where it's like the show does not understand how morning shows work, which is surprising since Brian Stelter, who wrote the book on the Today Show, is a consultant on it. Like, if you're hosting coverage that starts at 8 p.m. or whatever, you're not going to work the next day on the morning show. Like, they just drive you straight from Times Square to the studio. They have a B team.
And can I also express confusion as to where everyone lives? Because it seems like one of those, like, the mixed up files of Alex Levy situations where everyone is living on some kind of giant houseboat and solving crimes. Like, why is this happening? I mean, it's, again, beautiful to look at. I like some Art Deco architecture, but it's like, so you all live in 30 Rock?
Yeah, they did establish in season one that Corey and Bradley both live in the same hotel.
Okay. But but I feel like the studio is like on some other, like if they go down to the eighth floor, they'll be at like the old Bravo offices, right? And there's some weird lady in a tomato costume during a fire drill.
It's a big WeWork.
Yeah.
It does have big WeWork energy, yes.
Leaving aside the tone problems, which we discussed up top, I feel like the biggest problem the show has is that it tries to position extremely powerful, rich white women as downtrodden underdogs, and that it doesn't realize in doing so that makes it camp. Christina, what are your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I mean, I think some of the tiny threads of interest I was able to like pull out of the first that were not just, you know, this is delightfully nonsensical, was like in some ways, the things that Alex does to keep power is like a very interesting like meditation on like the ways like rich white women will sacrifice everyone to keep that power. The problem is that the show is like, yes, girl,
right?
Instead of like, this is a mistake. This is not a good thing to do. They seem to hedge towards like a little bit of like, Alex is not the actual feminist everyone believes her to be, due to the fact that Bradley was really the one to instigate this change in her brunette wig. But I don't know that the show is like, it doesn't make Bradley like any more downtrodden. Like, you've been rich for a year now. Like, what are you so mad about? Who do you think that you are like helping in your like quest for the truth right now? I don't think that she's quite getting it, and the show clearly doesn't.
Yeah. I mean, I think the show is in the position of a lot of properties over the years, which is that Jennifer Aniston, I think, is good when she's cast correctly. And then when she's not, she's still like fine, but it's very obvious that she wasn't cast correctly. Like, I'm thinking about The Good Girl, for which she was heavily praised. And I was like, her? It wasn't her fault. But I feel like, first of all, the show is trying to have it both ways with a lot of characters, not just her, but especially her. And there are a number of scenes in which she's trying to apologize to, you know, below the line talent, so to say, and or characters of color. And we're supposed to, I think, be on her side and be sad that her apologies aren't being accepted. But it's like, but she's just the same as anyone else in power. She just sort of like blunders along and is like, someone will clean that up, and then is offended when that is pointed out. And the show wants us to know that it knows that, but it doesn't want us to dislike her. And it's like, well, you can't do that.
Yeah.
You can't have it that way.
Yeah. The attempts they are making around race, like around Daniel and Mia's characters, around Greta Lee's inclusion as
Greta
this new
Lee.
President who mostly just wears sick loungewear to the office in a way that I'm
her
like,
shoes.
Yes, absolutely go off, ma'am.
Oh my God, yes, love her.
And like the way that the show is like, yes, aha, do you see us bravely commenting upon race? Where I'm like, oh, I wish you wouldn't, really wish you wouldn't, guys.
And then,
I don't
like
think you're
literally
equipped.
Confining, yeah.
Yeah, they're just not equipped to have that kind of conversation, though they clearly think they should be. And I know they rewrote like most of this season post the COVID shutdown, which God help us can only imagine what that first right looked like. I would pay untold sums of money to see
as
those
would
scripts.
I.
Oh boy.
All right. That bake sale starts immediately after the record.
Yeah,
because
I'm
if,
ready to go.
If this was the final that they're like, yep, we did it. It's like, oh,
what was
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
You did something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They just don't have the range. They don't have the range. They simply don't have the range.
Well, I mean, when the Greta Lee scenes, when she actually says, like, it's almost like an outline title. It's like, well, now we're going to talk about the young Asian woman's perspective on, like, I think maybe those were the actual words she said in a couple of the scenes. Like, when you have to, like, Martin Luther, you know, put that on, nail that to the door that way.
Yeah.
It's time for a second attempt at that piece of dialogue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a shame because she is so great. I mean, we all love her, but yeah.
I was invested in her storyline. I actually wanted to see more of what happens there because, like, that idea of an external entity being inserted into this giant juggernaut is something three of us are very, we have some experience with. And there was a lot of Bravo energy going on with the UBA executives and their interactions with their employees that I found familiar. So I kind of want to see more of her stuff, but maybe next season.
Well, I'm certainly glad to see more of her clothes. Christina. Oof. Please give us a tight five on Kathy and Jimmy as a New Year's Eve party psychic.
So when I was watching the first episode of this season, I had to take a couple trots around the house, kind of just work off some steam. You know, it had been a long time. I hadn't seen my gals in a while.
And I just want to know, I got several via Instagram DM voice texts from Christina as she reacted to the stuff in real time. And then got to play it out when I was watching ahead the screeners because I basically bullied Christina into giving me her like direct contact info so I could text her while I continued to watch, and that was a joy. Continue.
And yeah, I hope that continues as you finish the season.
Yes.
Yeah, and the first moment I really had to, I had to get up, I had to walk downstairs and just like see some other stuff was Kathy introduced as a psychic at some neighbor's New Year's Eve party. Okay, I'm believing Alex has friends. That's a joke, but whatever. Mm. She's just sitting there giving readings. What kind? Tarot, astrology. Okay, only straight woman wouldn't ask a follow-up question. That's fine. It's fine. She technically reads cards, but mostly just guesses incorrectly about Alex's life and then is like, seems like you're holding back. But you're wrong, Kathy. Be right. I don't understand anything that happened in that scene. Mm-hmm. The whole time I felt like I was on mushrooms and I was having the best time of my life. Perfect. No notes.
Anything to add, Sarah?
Not really. That I just was like, so you do this professionally?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know. You never even watched an episode of Long Island Medium? Come on, man.
Nothing about Alex Levy's like entrance into that scene was like, oh, this is a warm and interested person. She's like furious from the minute she sat down.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Go with that energy. Right. I need you to read the room, babe.
Right.
Yeah.
She's furious 100% of the time, which is why she is the perfect person for America to start their day with.
She's furious and on an edge of a breakdown at any second.
Yes. Oh, God, I love it so much.
How is it that individual components are all baffling and enraging, and yet the whole is this beautiful Fabergé egg?
Yep.
I don't know. The magic of television.
So watchable.
Yeah, I have much more to say on the subject, but unfortunately they are embargoed. So you lucky listeners will just, you'll know it when you see it. I assure you, you will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because
there's
so
some
will.
CT stuff that occurs later.
Almost as though
season.
You were in the writing room telling them what to do.
Personally have some lawyers working on this because I do feel my Twitter feed was straight up just stolen.
Did I have the word tucknip in my notes? Yes, I did.
So, yes, look out for that. Please subscribe to Christina's newsletter because it's brilliant. We will link it in the show notes, and you have to, basically.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah, all right, I'll take that.
Time to go around the dial talking about what we're watching on TV lately. First up, Tara.
Okay, the premise. It is a new anthology comedy, 5 question marks, series on, again, FX on Hulu. It was created and apparently largely written by BJ Novak, who I guess thinks he's a really well-known figure in the world of TV writing because his smug face is on all the posters for the show. He appears at the beginning of each episode to introduce it, except not even in the style of Rod Serling or Alfred Hitchcock, table setting the episode by letting us know what's coming up. It's literally just like, here's my face, it's my show, let's go. I'm not against anthology shows, even though I would say the anthology comedy is something I haven't really seen, tried much, or maybe ever. And I am, again, not totally sure I would even classify the show that way. So the first 2 episodes dropped last Thursday. They are wildly different. The first one is more overtly comedic, as the title, Social Justice Sex Tape, warns you. The premise is that Ethan Stryber, played by Ben Platt, was jerking off to an old sex tape he made with his then-girlfriend when he noticed that you could barely see through the window 2 white cops arresting a black activist named Darren Williams. He's played by Jermaine Fowler, in the course of which one cop trips and breaks his arm. And the case has gained a high profile because the cop claimed Darren resisted and broke the cop's arm. But since the evidence on the tape contradicts that story, Ethan has brought it to a nonprofit organization to urge them to help Darren in his defense. And he doesn't seem to get at first this will mean showing the tape in court, but the head of the organization, played by Tracy Ellis Ross, the queen, and the lawyer who wants to take the case, Ayo Edebiri, both convince him to go through with it by flattering his sense of himself as an ally. Like, he shows up to their first meeting in an NPR shirt. This is the vibe of subtlety. And things spiral out into absurdity as the prosecution tries to discredit Ethan and his motives by digging in on his life and sex habits. And if I'd looked away from the screen at the wrong time, I would have missed that the episode was co-written by Josie Duffy Rice, founder of the legal news site The Appeal. I want good things for her. I want that for Ross and Edebiri, but I ended the episode not totally sure what position the show was taking on anything, including like woke mobs and cancel culture, and ultimately just seemed to end as an indictment of virtue signaling. Also, not funny. And then the second episode is even less funny. John Bernthal is Chase Milbrandt, who's apparently all alone in the world after his 5-year-old daughter is fatally shot, and talks his way into a job doing PR at the National Gun Lobby.
It's pretty funny so far.
Yeah. Over the course of weeks or months, he gets embedded in the culture, accepting the friendship of a coworker named Aaron. I did confirm it. It's not Eric. Played by the always smarmy Boyd Holbrook. And since the organization obviously permits employees to carry guns and has a shooting range in the basement, Chase starts bringing in more and more and more guns on a day-to-day basis and to the office. And after having an unsettling conversation with Chase at Aaron's birthday party, Aaron's father, William, Beau Bridges, seems to warn Aaron that Chase might be planning something for the anniversary of his daughter's death when Chase has been asked to lead a moment of silence on a live stream. And without directly saying anything, Aaron and Chase each try to tell each other not to go to the office on that day. And I won't spoil what happens, but no part of the episode is funny, particularly not the way it ends. And I can't argue with the talent they lined up to act in these episodes. The one that's dropping this week will star Lucas Hedges, Caitlin Dever, George Wallace, and Ed Asner, among others. But basically, It seems to be for people who think Black Mirror is okay, but wish it were more smug. Also, worst, most ungoogleable title for a TV series since Episodes. I can't believe anyone allowed this to happen. The premise. On the lighter side, Doogie Kamealoha MD. Remember Doogie Howser MD from the 90s? This is that, except the child prodigy doctor is a 16-year-old girl. She lives on Oahu. She is adorable. She's played by Peyton Elizabeth Lee. Hilariously, the only attempt to tie this series into the original is that in the pilot, one of her colleagues says they call her Doogie because of the show. So apparently Doogie Howser MD exists in universe. I'm fine with it. Her actual name is Lahela. That's mostly what she gets called. Her father, Benny, is played by Jason Scott Lee. He used to work in finance, but got sick of the grind, so now he runs a shave ice and flour truck that usually seems to be parked outside the hospital. They shoot in actual Hawaii, which looks beautiful, of course. Her mother, Clara, is played by, speaking of episodes, Kathleen Rose Perkins from that show. She was the executive. She's also a doctor and Lahela's boss. There are two brothers, one young and nerdy, the other older and cool. The show seems not to have figured out what to do with them yet. They seem fine. And she has a best friend, Steph, who's giving big six from Blossom energy. She has a huge crush on the older brother, whose name is Kai. I only know that from looking at IMDb. Both of the guys, the boy brothers, are very extraneous. And she also has a boy crush, our lead, Lahela, named Walter, who's been raised by his single mom and six aunties, who in the pilot all show up to take pictures when he and Lahela go to a dance, which is cute. This is very much a sitcom for teen sensibilities. The medical stuff is very lightly laid in, mostly for Lahela to learn lessons from her patients that she can apply to her own life. But there are also some sneaky good jokes in there, too. One of the co-EPs is Allison Bennett, who formerly wrote on You're the Worst and Single Parents, and the creator is Courtney Kang from How I Met Your Mother and Fresh Off the Boat fame. Episodes drop every Wednesday on Disney Plus. It's so cute. If you decided to watch Scenes from a Marriage, which I talked about last week, and you need something to like come down from how awful it made you feel, Doogie Kamealoha MD is perfect for that. So recommend. And for my plug, James Wolk, Bob from the Not Great Bob meme, has a new pilot. Yes, another one. It's called Ordinary Joe. It premiered on Monday this week. And so I wrote about his spotty career as a leading man for Decider, and we will link that in the show notes.
Christina.
The third season of Sex Education dropped on Netflix last Friday. It is a delight. It is possibly my favorite season of Sex Education. I loved the first season. The second season was a little hit or miss for me. But I think they've done a really incredible job of rounding out some of the characters we know and love on this here new season, and also bringing in some new characters. The premise is basically the same as where we left off in season two. Maeve and Otis no longer speaking. There was a voicemail. It was deleted. There's teen drama. Eric is dating his bully, which people have feelings about. All of that is really beautifully dealt with. They have a new character named Cal, who is played by a non-binary actor and who is a non-binary kid in the school. We have Jemima Kirk entering as like this scary, like kind of turfy English type headmaster, who is just doing an incredible job of showing like how dangerous and disgusting like white feminism can be. She's incredible and scary. Gillian Anderson is hugely pregnant for some reason. She still looks incredible, still would marry her in a second. And I just had a really wonderful time revisiting this show, even though the show does feel like it takes place in like a magical Hamlet that only exists every quarter by the light of the crescent moon. Like it is so not real world. Everything that occurs in the show and this little town that they live in, I'm like, okay, sure. In this one magical little place, all of these things can happen. But the character development really always feels real to me. Eric continues to be the greatest character perhaps ever written. There's a beautiful episode where he goes to Nigeria to visit his family, and it's just a gorgeous, beautiful thing to look at. I love those kids. I don't even like kids, famously. Not a teen show watcher. I'm always like, where are the moms? I don't understand why I'm trying to watch this show about children. Who cares? But this one gets me every time. So Sex Education Season 3, go watch all the
episodes. I was just asked if we were going to be talking about that on the podcast. And then I was like, maybe in Around the Dial, having not checked and seen.
It's me. So, I'm the dial.
Paul, you manifested this. You did it.
Speaking of
the, he said the name of the Hamlet three times and then turned around and spat. And I asked him, like, well, should I watch it? Should I add it to the list? So I don't, I feel like I should now.
I would recommend it. It's a breezy watch. There's like 8 episodes in this current season. Like, it's, you can crush it in a day. Like,
okay.
You're a TV watcher. You're a professional. You can
it's
do
true.
It. And plug time. I have a podcast at Auto Straddle. It is titled Wait, Is This a Date? It is trying to answer the centuries old question that has haunted queers forever. Did we go on a date? Are we just friends? I don't know what the vibe is. It's a ton of fun. Our first season is now almost over. We have 10 episodes, but we will be back for another season dealing with more. Should I break up with this person? Probably. was it a date? Who can say? We also play fun games. And you can also catch my writing at autostraddle.com, where I write really a host of things that are equally unwell, but they're all pretty gay. So... Staying on brand.
And your C_GraceT on Twitter.
Oh, yes. You can find me at twitter.com, the website, where I do be tweeting and muting. So you can reply all you want, but I'm probably not going to listen to you. So just know that. It's not personal.
Sarah, what do you have?
Oh, well, Law & Order, SVU. I've seen the first part of the season 23 premiere.
Oh, my God.
It's everything we've come to not love about the show, including Rollins embroiling herself with a colleague, which in theory, I don't hate it this time. Those two have chemistry and he is I would climb him like a tree. But girl, please stop shitting everywhere you eat in every dish. It's just insane. The show teasing a possible love connection between Benson and Stabler, while at the same time obliging Benson to report to IAB again to defend Stabler in the matter of a police-involved shooting again. The episode has thrown two major cases, each ickier than the next, Jeffrey Epstein and Matt Gaetz, into a blender, and then name-check them while pouring, just so we know what we're watching. Thanks. A comp stat meeting is used as an expositional tool, and Olivia Benson, the captain of the Special Victims Squadron, has the following line, quote, Finn, help me understand. What is it with these men?
What? It's season Wait, <that's> 23.
It's season 23.
Oh,
Finn
my God.
Is also given the line, nothing sadder than white people congratulating themselves, which is white people congratulating themselves for writing that line. Utterly fucking typical latter-day SVU, which is trying to have it both ways and failing at both ways. And then there's like a 22-minute shot of Mariska Hargitay almost crying and working the meniscus. And, you know, she looks great. Her hair looks good. But like, guys, what are you doing? It also seems like they might be setting up an Emmy bait pill addiction storyline for Liv this season off of Mariska's IRL broken ankle. And I would say that I just don't know if I can with that, but we all know that I can and will and am going to because I am an SVU dead ender. And the first half of the premiere is entertaining in that how ham-fisted will this issue of Goofus and Gallant PD be way? So if you're also a completist of this foolishness, at me on every possible social medium. I would love to trade eye emojis with you. On social, God help us all. For my plug, would you like to read a book on a real crime instead and save some money whilst doing so? Great news. You can visit my true crime bookshop, Exhibit B, enter code EHG373 and get 15% off your order. The discount is good through Sunday, and there's a link in the show notes to apply it to your cart automatically, exhibitbbooks.com.
Coming up on Extra Extra Hot Great this week, it is Dave makes everyone watch the Nero episode of Ancient Rome.
God, it was so good.
Don't you dare!
with Michael Sheen eating his way through the Roman Empire.
Oh my God, it was so good.
And then because it is one of those months, on Tuesday, we have another extra, extra hot grade for you. It is Recast This Big Love. We're going to update that show with a modern cast. And I guess I'll have to find out about Big Love because I don't think I've seen more than one episode. That's available to all supporters at any level. Visit us at patreon.com/extrahotgrate to sign up. And then right here on EHG Prime next week, we have a show transported from 2006, I think, La Brea. Yeah. About tar pits and underground stuff and mayhem. And
a sinkhole opens in Los Angeles and a bunch of people get sucked through to an alternate dimension.
Yeah.
I feel like if this was 2006, it would be like three sinkhole shows at once. You know, it'd be La Brea and like Karsk, which is like the name for like underground topography, and like some other show. And they would all be battling. And one would have one would have William Fichtner in it. And then you wouldn't know anybody in the other ones.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It has big
Jim
Terra
Caviezel,
Nova energy.
I think.
Caviezel. Absolutely.
Some Quaid you never heard of before.
Mm-hmm. We welcome back Nick Reinwell Jones to talk about La Brea. And we're all looking forward to that. Come back next week for all that sinkhole goodness.
Yep. Sinkhole goodness, speaking of the morning show.
No, I had a nickel.
I said sinkhole goodness, speaking of the morning show.
Seriously.
Today's extra credit topic comes to us from Amelia. She titles it Only the Good Ones and writes, sometimes there's a particular TV character who is a lot more compelling than the mediocre show around them. Often this happens when the actor is more talented than their co-stars and or when a show goes downhill, but one character remains well-written. Pull one or two excellent characters from not excellent shows and give a summary of the new show in which they would star. Then add a couple more great characters from other mediocre shows and say how they would factor into the plot as supporting characters. Bonus points if you can give the show a clever title. For example, this is Amelia's example, Wilhelmina Slater of Ugly Betty and Blair Waldorf of Gossip Girl team up to investigate fashion-based crimes in New York, all while hurling witty insults at victims, perpetrators, and each other. A key plotline involves sabotaged stage wear worn by Ivy Lynn of Smash, with the ultimate villain being revealed as a jealous Titus Andromedon from Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. Title, Crimes of Fashion. Perfect. Got it.
Beautiful.
I'll go first. In mine, Sandy Cohen from The O.C., played by Peter Gallagher, we all know this, and Bernie Ginsburg, Monica Lewinsky's lawyer from Impeachment. He hasn't been on the show yet, but he's going to be played by Fred Melamed later in the season, so get excited for that. They're going into legal practice together. Because he does so much pro bono work as a defense attorney, Sandy needs a partner who's going to be a good earner for the business and float him, basically, which is why Bernie's perfect. Even though he represented Monica amid her scandal, his actual specialty is medical malpractice, a.k.a. ka-ching. So it's a good old-fashioned episodic procedural with new clients coming in and out every week. Those could be whatever characters you like from shows that are average. And two irascible partners constantly needling each other about their choices and values, but ultimately respecting each other. And they're going to need someone in the office to do all the grunt work, a.k.a. a paralegal, and that's going to be Rachel Zane from Suits, famously played by Meghan Markle. Mm-hmm. A couple of years ago, no one would suggest this, but her schedule has definitely opened up, and now I think she would at least consider it. I really struggled with what to call this, since I think every legal pun has already been used on court shows, but given the common Jewish ancestry of our lead characters, not actors, nice try, Peter Gallagher, let's say it's kosher counsel. Why not? Sarah.
Okay, so Principal Wood from the last season of Buffy, D.B. Woodside, and Victor from Mr. Corman, Arturo Castro, team up to offer a prestigious and exclusive computer science course at California University. Little do prospective students know that they'll be helping a team of international grifters and heist artists pull jobs and launder money at the direction of Mr. Robot's White Rose, B.D. Wong, and I don't know why everyone in this fanfic has the initials B.D. or D.B. I swear that was not intentional. Mini heists in the course of a season include honey trap art jobs run by Frankie and Ren from Animal Kingdom and prison breaks coordinated by Westmoreland / here it is again, D.B. Cooper from Prison Break, played by Muse Watson. Naturally, the show is called CPU. And just as naturally, there will be guest appearances from Megan Rotundi of Felicity, because she shows up in every extra credit I do, and Ginsburg from Mad Men, because justice for his nipple. Christina.
This was a challenge, but a fun one. So I'm taking Gigi from the L Word Generation Q. She is trapped. She deserves something better than that. Similarly trapped is Kim Reaver on Grey's Anatomy, still attached to Owen. She's now canonically bisexual. She and Gigi are getting married and they're getting the hell out of here. Mm-hmm. I think I'm going to bravely make this like a fictional HGTV show wherein Gigi buys things and Ted and she and Teddy are flipping them. I don't know what it's called. Is it called Flipping for Your Doc? I don't. Who cares? I just want to watch those two beautiful women hang out with each other and save each other from the shows that they are currently trapped on.
Why, it is time for the Extra Hot Great Canon. Presenting this week is Tara.
Hello.
Hi.
On May 1st, 2019, I came to the segment to present the third episode of The Other Two, Chase Gets a Girlfriend. This was something of a risky move since the show had only premiered on Comedy Central a few scant months earlier, but the episode sailed through. That was 2.5 years ago chronologically and 5,000 years ago if you measure by how we all feel, and a lot has changed. For starters, The Other Two is no longer on Comedy Central. It is now an original series on HBO Max, a streaming platform that did not exist when we talked about the show the last time. Before Joe made his Girls 5 Eva canon pick when he was just on to talk about Heels last month, he asked if it was too new, and that thing had come out 4 months earlier. I, on the other hand, am presenting an episode of The Other Two that dropped less than 2 weeks ago in a season that is not even over yet. Friends, let's talk about Chase Gets Baptized. The season one finale revealed that though he is very adorable, Chase can't actually sing. Now his team, not just everyone at his record label and his original manager, Streeter, but also his new co-manager, Brooke, has been working on a pivot. College didn't work out, but a new blonde dye job seems to have been much more successful. Though the majority of Brooke's time is taken up with her mother, Pat, a newly minted daytime star, Brooke also has an eye on how to advance Chase's brand in ways that don't actually involve music, namely a fashion line, which is what has brought all the Dubek kids plus Streeter to a very hot church called Christ Song. Here's what I think makes Chase Gets Baptized canon-worthy. Number one, the specificity of both its hipster church satire and that church's appeal to our leads. You don't have to know that Christ Song is a parody of the actual faith organization Hillsong to enjoy this episode, but it definitely helps. Brooke feels Chase's next career move, as I said, should be a clothing line, and Streeter has decided that Chase is going to be baptized into the congregation so that he can gain access to all of the very powerful and connected people who are already members, so they can help. Carrie and Brooke come along to services, a party around the rooftop pool at Soho House, officiated by the shirtless and aggressively spray-tanned Pastor Jack Stagg. And by the way, if you thought it was Jack Stagg, which I did when I watched it the first time, it's not. It's Jack.
Just as good. Just as
Dag.
Good.
Let's hear clip one.
And the Lord spoke unto me and said, my child, you shall lead a church where all celebrities can worship freely. It shall be called Christ Song, and thy name shall be Pastor Jack Stagg. Okay. How's everybody feeling today? I feel so blessed to be here today as your pastor. You know, I didn't always think I was going to be a pastor. I thought I was going to have my own prank show on MTV, but God had different plans for me.
Ew, this is insane.
I know.
I'm getting like one email per second.
Now I can remember the first time I ever felt the power of the Lord. I was water skiing, and I got up on the very first try. I had never done it before. And here I was, just crushing it.
Wow.
At first, Brooke and Carrie are somewhat dubious about the whole thing. As we've already seen in the episode's flashback cold open, they were raised in a typically conservative Christian church. Not that it seems to have really made much of a dent in either of them. The pastor's anti-Will and Grace sermon didn't dissuade Carrie from coming out as gay later in life, though he's still too intimidated to get on Grindr. And Brooke just slept through it. classic Brooke. However, once they start to learn more about what Christ Song has to offer, like a job for Carrie to guest star on a new Riverdale spinoff or a free trip to Mykonos with spa services on the church's private jet for Brooke, they decide they've also been called, and the editing is impeccable as we see first Carrie and then Brooke get into Pastor Jax's arm in the pool to be baptized themselves. Carrie can't wait to tell his friend Curtis how he's just booked an actual acting job, but Curtis has bad news. Christ Song is famously homophobic and misogynistic, so Carrie can't take the job for ethical reasons. Cue the forum shopping as Carrie brings this information to Brooke. Clip two.
I talked to Curtis, and he said this church is anti-gay, so I can't take the role.
Oh.
But I was thinking maybe I could still take it and stay in the church because this role could lead to other roles, and then one day I might be famous enough to take down the church from the inside. You know, because it takes power to enact change, so in a way, it would be anti-gay of me not to take the role.
Carrie, I love you, but I don't think you can take it, right? Like, morally? Anyway, I gotta get back to my girls. We're planning our Mykonos trip.
Curtis also said the church is anti-woman.
So I do see what you were saying earlier about needing power to enact change.
Right.
This church is probably anti-woman because it's run by men. So I should stay in the church and go to Mykonos and rise in the ranks and become its first female leader.
So your plan is to be the leader of an anti-woman church?
Carrie then suddenly remembers that Curtis can be wrong sometimes, so maybe they should each ask some other objective people about this. Brooke reluctantly agrees to pull some women, and Carrie will try to track down some gay guys. Clip three.
So where do I find gay men near me?
Oh my God. Grindr.
No, okay, I haven't even used Grindr to have sex. I can't use it to ask people if I can be in an anti-gay church.
Carrie, guys on Grindr are up for anything. This is technically that.
We'll come back to Grindr. But the point here is that the episode beautifully and economically lays out what makes Christ Song so attractive to such parishioners as Hailey Bieber, four out of the six Avengers, and the Dubeck. Creature comforts, the body of Christ is a margarita flatbread, and career opportunities that seem too good to be true. Number two, the specificity of its satire of queer culture in 2021. Am I qualified to comment on this from personal experience? No, but this episode was co-written by series co-creator Chris Kelly, who is gay, and when your writing staff includes such names as Joel Kim Booster, Cole Escola, Brandon Scott Jones, who also plays Curtis, and Matt Rogers, half of whom are about to be in a modern-day gay Pride and Prejudice movie set on Fire Island, I feel like the authenticity is baked in. So back to Carrie, who gets on Grindr and finds a guy in the very hotel they're in. Clip four.
Hey.
Oh, shit, you've been in my phone this whole time? You actually don't have to, Jesus Christ.
Guy undresses.
I was actually just wondering, whew, look at that fat dick. Nope, sorry. I just have to ask you a question. It's going to be a little weird, but I was offered a role on a TV show.
I'll run lines with you after. That's not weird. Most guys ask to do that.
No. I was offered a role, but I have to be in an anti-gay church to take it. Do you think I could do that? Probably, right? Also, you were really going to have sex with me, like with that dick and those wet abs. You saw me and you were like, yeah, I'd have sex with him.
Yeah, you're hot.
Oh my God, I think I'm going to pass out.
But for me, I guess I wouldn't take the role. That just feels morally wrong. Can I take off your shirt?
I would love that, but I do have to go find someone else to give me the opposite answer.
He goes to a different room in the same hotel, and here's how that goes. Clip five.
Morally, I say, who gives a fuck?
Yes, who gives a fuck? Thank you.
But you might eat shit online.
What's that now?
I guess it depends how famous you are. Tony?
Yeah.
Do you know who this guy is?
No. This is no one to me. Sorry.
No, I am no one. It's like Carrie Dubeck. Who cares what he does?
Carrie Dubeck? Oh my God, you're like famous.
No, I am not. I am no one. He just said.
Sorry, is this an actor I should know?
Not really an actor, more like just a host.
Exactly, more like just a host. So you shouldn't know who I am. It's actually kind of weird he does.
Okay, hold on. So Tony doesn't know you. And
Bruce
does. I think we need a tiebreaker. Curtis?
Yes?
Carrie, what are you doing here?
Shit, nothing. I was just...
Wait, are you trying to get permission from other gays to take that part?
No.
By the way, this all comes after Carrie's shitty agent offers him a hosting gig on a game show that only exists on Grindr and for which the grand prize is a year's supply of prep. Finally, arguably the queerest thing about the episode is that the iconic Natalie Walker is in it as Brooke's new Mykonos travel pal. Here, her first name is Seinfeld. Number three. The episode keeps chase the norm of the satire. After Brooke and Carrie both fail to find anyone to back their play on staying in a church they know is fundamentally evil, Brooke even struck out with a woman from Texas. Brooke always forgets about Austin. When Carrie suggests that maybe they could stay anyway because no one knows who they are and the backlash will land on the really famous parishioners, Brooke realizes that would include Chase. So they have to let him know he's not going to be spending any more time in Christ Song than he did at NYU. Clip six.
Hey, bud, I have some bad news. This church is anti-gay and anti-woman, so I don't think we can stay.
Oh, that sucks.
It's okay. I think he just needs time to process it. I mean, it took us 2 hours, and he's a child.
Hey, guys. I just heard some news that really sucks. Apparently, this church is anti-gay and anti-woman. So I have to leave without even giving it a second thought. Because when you hear information like this, that's what you do. You act.
Yes, that's right. You act immediately.
I also then Googled the church right away just so I'd be properly informed.
Yep, that's what you do. You Google. You Google right away.
Mm-hmm. And I found a lot of bad stuff. Apparently you guys don't allow gay people to hold positions of power?
Wow. You guys are okay with this?
And you have a history of sexism that goes all the way to the top.
This is so bad, you guys.
It also says some of your leaders used to support conversion therapy.
Wait, I actually didn't know that one.
Is this church worse than our old church? Why do you guys all look so cool? If you're this anti-gay, you should be, like, living in pig shit, not doing Molly at the Soho House.
And Pastor Jax... Apparently your dad has some weird allegations against him that you helped cover up using church money. It says something to do with little kids.
So all the other characters' swirling craziness would be just that if there weren't someone in the mix who is just sweet, easygoing, and utterly guileless. Chase might be a secondary character in terms of screen time. In fact, that's how I described him in my first canon presentation. But he is vitally important in more ways than just the catalyst for the series premise. The show's producers deploy him with precision and judiciousness whenever the essentially absurd Brooke and Carrie need to be grounded. And number four, it's satire of everything else. Clip seven.
God, Carrie, this is the least sexy picture I have ever seen. It's supposed to be of, like, your butt or dick.
Okay, I do not have pics like that on my phone.
Oh, well, I do. How about this dick?
No, that's Noah Centineo's. Every person alive is going to recognize that.
Okay.
By the way, Brooke was on Grindr before Carrie, mostly to get TV show recommendations. Moving on, clip eight.
I want acting roles. There are so many TV shows now, it's statistically impossible for me not to be on one. I just saw my upstairs neighbor, who's a shut-in on Ozark.
We're not done with peak TV. Clip nine.
It'd be great for the elderly teacher with dementia. It's only two scenes and then you die, but it's a great death. Goldilocks kills you.
As in the Three Bears?
Yeah, they just kind of let us do whatever.
Speaking of James Wolk, there was a show... CBS, created by Kevin Williamson, who created Dawson's Creek, called Tell Me a Story, where it was like weird live-action retellings of fairy tale, and it was bizarre. Did someone say late capitalism? Clip 10.
God damn it! I'm like, I'm grateful for my job or whatever, but all I do is work. I actually look forward to shitting now because it's the only time I can't physically get up and do something.
There's also the fact that after they all get fully submerged for their baptisms, Carrie, Brooke, and Streeter then have to walk around for the rest of the night in Christ Song robes with their hair all flat and weird, a detail that is never remarked upon and is so much funnier because of it. Chase Gets Baptized is an up-to-the-bleeding-edge timely riff on an especially gross element of contemporary celebrity culture. So timely, in fact, that as I was preparing this case on Friday night and checking my facts, I saw a 7-hour-old headline noting that a Hillsong founder was stepping down from the church's board ahead of a court date, so, you know. But Through the Christ Song lens, the episode also progresses our core characters in their season arcs and remind us that they are a family whose teasing comes from a place of real love. I hope you will go with your heart and your analytical mind as you decide whether to vote it into the canon. Christina, why don't you start us off?
I absolutely love this episode, and I will confirm for listeners and for all of you, as a famously putting the L in LGBTQ, this does, in fact, nail queer culture in this moment. It is hilarious. So many of these jokes felt like things that my very gay circle of friends talk about and talk like all of the time. We are not doing enough searching for other gays to give us an answer on something problematic that we would like to consume. I think we should start doing that more. It's very funny. This episode is brilliant. I love also the running bit about Streeter just wanting the kids to love him because he is their daddy in his heart and in his mind. And I think that's really sweet and lovely. This episode had me rolling with laughter and screaming at, of course, the gayest thing about it, Natalie Walker herself. put it in the canon, put it in the canon forever and ever and all time. Amen.
All right, Sarah.
Agree. I always, during a canon presentation, check off the lines that I wrote down. And I think I checked off everything because you mentioned all of it, except maybe if church weren't so goddamn boring, because seriously, I love the Lord almost as much as I love to act was an amazing line delivery. His grinder guy that he ends up with has we're in Sam Elliott levels of sexy voices. I just want to note that. Good for that guy and for all of us as a culture. I think that your point about Chase sort of grounding things is really well taken, but I also like generally, and I've always liked about the show, that the actual other two have appropriate reactions to what's going on around them, that they don't sort of... It's not at this level of a Wet Hot American Summer, for instance. Like, it works for them, but sometimes there's a reaction to the just complete surreality of what's happening, and sometimes there isn't. Mm-hmm. Whereas in this one, like, they seem to realize that, like, the world around them has gone mad. That's part of why they're so relatable to the audience, is that they're having, you know, appropriate, recognizable reactions to bizarre, unrecognizable situations. I am going to need that Red Lobster shirt.
Yeah, I was going to mention that. Yeah,
absolutely.
You can at me at Tomato Nation. Let me know where I can find it. I'm sure it's out there. The fact that it was so new. And Streeter's, I just got back from only peeing in the bathroom. announcement. Oh god. And then he like made this teeny hand gesture that I was like, oh god. I mean, this show is just so well observed and so mean to its characters because it's also so fond of them. That it's always a pleasure to revisit it. I love it. Good presentation.
Thank you so Dave. Much.
Yeah, I feel like the show's like vibe in that way where the characters are both reacting in a realistic way sometimes, but also like there's these, I feel like it's like an evolution of the Seinfeld sort of take on things where like there's these outrageous, crazy situations, but in Seinfeld, it never kind of like comes back down to earth because the characters are all just so heightened and like, you know, it doesn't really have a grounding like the show does that I feel like it's very satisfying in that way where you get sort of like this randomness that happens, which is always fun and unpredictable. And that's sort of like one of the things I enjoy about comedies I enjoy when I don't quite know what I'm going to get week after week. But also it feels real, which is nice. And I think it's going to give the show legs beyond what it probably would have gotten given that it started off in Comedy Central and it's not getting a lot of marketing boosts or anything like that. You know, it's sort of a word of mouth kind of show. We should mention what the shirt says because people are going to be like, is this like on the eighth day God got his ass to Red Lobster? Is that the shirt?
Something like that.
Yeah, just all the weird little corporate hooks into the Christ song church is they were great.
Yeah, the gospel of the Lord. Drink water, you guys. Perfect.
What I like about this season is the focus on Brooke. I'm really enjoying Brooke a lot. She's getting more screen time, and her character is just such a. You know, she's got a real job, but it feels very much like she's in a gig economy still.
Mm-hmm.
It's a failure success story.
Yeah.
And a lot of great sort of exasperated comedy is coming out of that. And I'm kind of here for that. It's good.
You also don't see a lot of women like this character, I don't think, that are just like
a mess.
Yeah, but yeah. Like not in a cutesy
yes.
way. Yeah. Like they don't try to sort of make it more PG or like acceptable. Mm-hmm. Like she is flailing with substances. And it's like, well, okay, that's what that looks like. I heard. So thank you. Hi.
Yeah.
And the other episode from this season where she's on the feminist conference.
She's on a panel.
Q&A panel, where she sort of ends up failing upwards at the end is very much in keeping with her character. And that was a great episode.
Well, I feel like I also could have submitted the episode that was, when I wrote this, we had not watched yet, from last week, where she hooks up with a celebrity and then has to deal with the consequences of breaking her NDA. Which also just spirals completely out of control. It has been such a good season. And I also want to just say, for my own vindication, to everyone who, when Hacks was happening, also on HBO Max, and I told everyone, if you like Hacks, please also watch the other two, forgetting that the co-creators of that show, Lucia Aniello and Paul W. Downs, were also writers on the other two in season one, and they co-wrote that other episode that I talked about from season one. So I was right. And
synergy.
Yes. Yeah. Watch both these shows. They're great.
Last note on this episode is how much did the people that ran this show, cast this show, really wanted Justin Theroux to play the Christ song pastor? Because he is very much Justin Theroux. I know he's a character on, mm-hmm. like, he is mentioned a lot on this show, but I was thinking, like, they should get Justin Theroux to play the pastor, mm-hmm. and then if they ever have to show Justin Theroux on the show, it's just somebody who kind of looks like Justin Theroux,
sure.
as real-life Justin Theroux in mm-hmm. the other two universes. Like, think would be really funny.
Yeah.
Anyway, I just dropped my bottle, so I'm just going to mark that. Try to edit around that. Probably can't. All right, let's put this to the official vote. Christina, what does say you? Canon worthy or not?
Hell yeah.
Sarah DeBundy?
Jesus fucking saves. Hell yeah.
All right, I'm going to say yes too. So... The Other Two, Season 2, Episode 5. You just watched it recently. Chase gets baptized. You're hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It's time for the winner and the loser of the week. Tara has this week's winner.
Lots of tributes to Michael K. Williams this week. I'm going to say the winner is the Baltimore Ravens. Do I care about sports? No. Do I specifically think the NFL is kind of immoral? Yes. Mm. But they paid tribute to Michael K. Williams and specifically to his character from The Wire, Omar Lil, by playing a whistled farmer in the Dell at their first game of the season. And I'll also just sub-mention Tobias Menzies beat Michael K. Williams for what would have been a posthumous Emmy Award on Sunday because The Crown just, like, swept everything, which, like, The Crown? Okay. But sure. He subsequently dedicated his win to Michael K. Williams and, you know, had a very nice tweet about how great he was. And I'll also just say, if you want to be the winner of next week, buy me LG's 325-inch television. It's $1.7 million, but I'm sure someone listening has that and wants to buy a TV for me, right?
Where would we mount it? Like, on the roof? That's the only place we have that much.
That was going to be my follow-up.
UT. Yeah.
Is it also a solar panel? Because that's the only way it's going to work here. Loser of the week?
That is Edie Falco. Even if you have a 325-inch television, you will not see her in The Many Saints of Newark because she got cut. The explanation for that, which is they shot a bunch of different like ways in to the story via flashback, makes total sense. But it's like, if you have her and you dressed her, why wouldn't you use her?
Yeah.
Yeah, it feels illegal to me.
Yeah, just like, I don't know, put her in the background of some other scene. Come on, man.
I mean, the silver lining is that they didn't go with another actor sitting in a chair and just, like they did with the
get the knife Mama out Soprano, of the
that one up. That was embarrassing.
Yeah, that was bad.
Ooh, yeah.
Speaking about potentially embarrassing things, you know what time it is?
It's game time.
It's game time.
Have a guess.
Welcome back to Official Game Time. We had a non-regulation game last week. To remind you, this is the ninth game time of the regulation season. The season scores currently are Value Guess with 1, Sarah with 3, and Tara's has 4 right now. So if she wins today, she clinches the season. So don't let that happen, whatever you do, guys. Today we are playing Pilot Error from David Ellis Dickerson, who earns himself an extra credit topic of his choosing. In this game, I'm going to read you off an element of a TV show that is established in the pilot, but which was almost immediately abandoned.
Ah.
Ooh. For example, if I said, if you watched this pilot, you might think, my goodness, I imagine there's going to be a lot of storylines about Moira Kelly's PR firm, and you would be wrong. The answer there would be
The West Wing.
Yes, The West Wing. Correct answer is worth 2 points. If you ask for a hint, I will give you the year the show debuted, so the year the pilot aired, and its general genre. A correct guess after that is worth 1 point. So if you're not sure, ask for the hint. You only get one guess.
Got it. Thank you.
Got it.
There are 27 questions. They are listed in reverse chronological order. So as we get further in the game, the shows are going to get older and older, so probably more difficult. So we're going to start you off easy with recent stuff, and we're going to eventually get into Farnsworth territory.
Okay.
Steel meal situation, please. Tara Ariano.
Well, first of all, I want to remind you, you won 3 steel meals last week to distribute as you see fit.
I reserve the right to distribute them in the moment.
Oh.
Yes.
That's exciting.
Yes.
Okay. Hot. Currently, Sarah D. Bunting has 1. I have 9. Valued Guest has 3.
Okay.
9 is so dang many.
Okay, let's throw it to Picky to see who will go first today.
We will start with Valued Guest.
All right, Christina's in the hot seat. Then we're going to go Sarah D. Bunting. And then Tara, are we ready to play Pilot Error?
Yes.
Yeah.
Here, as ready as I'll ever be.
We go. Reminding you, we're starting newest, going to oldest. Alongside the other two series regulars, the pilot has a woman named Daniels, the third lazy do-nothing cop.
I'm going to need that year, I think. I'm going to need something.
Okay. We are talking about a 2013 sitcom pilot.
Oh, are we talking Brooklyn Nine-Nine?
We are. Good for 1 point.
Wow.
Don't remember that at all.
Yeah.
Nicely done.
Sarah, originally the third roommate was a guy named Coach. In episode 2, he's replaced by a fourth roommate. It is not Coach.
No. I feel like I want to guess New Girl, but I'm not going to. I'm going to guess 2 Guys, a Girl, and a Pizza Place. Should I guess New Girl?
The show in question is New Girl.
Ugh! Oh, well.
Occam's razor. In effect. All right, Tara.
Seems too easy.
In the pilot, cousin Mike helps Jimmy out with the family's pool cleaning business. By episode 2, it's a yard work business, and cousin Mike has left a note explaining he's met a girl and joined a cult. One day has passed.
God. Earlier than New Girl. That feels familiar, but I guess give me the year. Probably won't help, though.
Just a little bit earlier. That is a 2010 sitcom. 1 year earlier.
Yeah. I don't know. Pass.
Here's an extra hint. It features, eventually, a shirt that I made and sold.
My Name is Earl?
No. That is Raising Hope.
Featuring
Abe Lincoln versus Bigfoot shirt from
Darkwing. Oh,
right. I forgot about that shit.
A show that existed.
Yeah.
No doubt.
All right, back to Christina. In the pilot, the male lead makes ironic comments, even though it is later firmly established in the series that he does not understand sarcasm. Also, the neighbor down the hall claims to be a vegetarian when she definitely eats meat in later episodes.
Yeah, hit me with that year, buddy.
2007 sitcom. The sitcom started in 2007.
Yeah, I got nothing on this one.
Inabilities to understand sarcasm, non-vegetarian vegetarians, that is the Big Bang Theory.
Oh. That's, okay. I've never seen a dang episode, that's why.
Sarah D. Bunting. In the pilot, the main character has a girlfriend who is suspicious of his psychic abilities, played by Anne Dudek. She is gone by episode 2.
Hint.
It is a 2006 comedy drama.
Journeyman. That's not it.
Incorrect. That is psychic abilities, psych. That is psych. Back to Tara.
Yep.
Dudek? Wow.
The main character has a friend named Sunny who is part of a running bit where they try to hit each other with thrown beer cans multiple times throughout the pilot. The character vanishes inexplicably in episode 2, but in season 3, it is revealed he went to prison for hitting a cop with an empty beer can.
Give me that year.
2005 sitcom. Right, question 6, and we've already gone back 16 years.
We have one correct answer. There's 1 point on the board so far,
yeah,
by the way.
Yeah, 1 point.
Christina, good job.
Thank you.
Throwing beer cans at each other. God.
Only in the pilot. 2005 sitcom.
2.5 Men? That's not right.
Oh, this is the previously mentioned My Name is Earl.
Ah! Oh, sure. All right. That does make sense now.
Let's see if Christina can pull even further ahead with the pilot used an actual unfinished model home instead of a studio set. The pilot used an actual unfinished model home instead of a studio set.
There's so many homes on TV is the thing. A year?
This is a 2003 sitcom.
Yeah, no, we're just going to keep it moving and past that because nope, got nothing.
Steel meal, Sarah?
I only have one. For 2 points, I would, but...
All right, the show there, since I think people know, want to shout it out?
It's Arrested Development.
Arrested Development, it correct. Is. The unfinished model home was actually what they shot, yes.
Yeah.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Yeah.
In this pilot episode, Jason Gray Stanford's dim-witted police detective is listed in the credits as Lieutenant Deacon.
You know, that Jason Gray Stanford vehicle we all remember.
JGS?
My absolute king?
Monk?
Hell yeah!
There we go. On the
board. Wow, it was like an assassin. That was cool.
Sarah D. Bunting, I believe, now has double the points of anybody else.
That's correct.
Wow.
Tara.
Yeah.
In the pilot, the hotel has a surly harpist played by Alex Borstein.
Gilmore Girls.
She was clearly intended to be a recurring character, but vanishes very early on. Gilmore Girls is correct. 2 for you as well. Whew. Back to Christina. In the pilot... the main character's voice is very different from the way it sounds for the rest of the series. This is because once the show got picked up, the actor, who was born in Westwood, New Jersey, got a dialect coach to train him to sound like someone from Newark.
Is it The Sopranos?
It is The Sopranos, yes. Sarah D. Bunting. In the pilot, there is a sound booth where they later have a lounge, and the handyman is named Rick.
Scrubs?
Incorrect. That is News Radio.
And I go back to always getting Scrubs questions wrong either by answering that incorrectly
order in the
or
universe is once again
back in balance.
Yeah. Tara.
Yep.
In the first episode, it is clear that several of the characters either have never met or haven't seen one another since high school. This becomes less plausible every time the show does a flashback episode.
Hint.
This is a 1994 sitcom.
Oh, Friends.
Correct. Good for one. Back to Christina. The pilot episode had a completely different title than the show later got. Also, the main character was straight. So we have two possible title answers we'll give, but you really know it by the latter.
Where are my gaze located in time? I guess it's like where I'm thinking around. Because like how many were there really, you know, to even think about back in that day? It's not Will and Grace. It can't be Will and Grace. Because
it is not newer than 1994. I can give you that much information based on information previously given. Yeah.
Oh, I think I'm going to have to pass.
Well, I gave you the hint, which probably won't help too much, but it is a 1994 sitcom.
Yeah, that's not helping me.
Yeah. All right. Anybody else?
Is that Ellen?
It's Ellen, yes. Oh, These Friends God. Of Mine or Ellen.
Of course. Yes.
No, I'm sorry. I forgot to let you guys know. She's actually not gay anymore. We have let her go.
She's on a nice flow.
We disavow her.
Totally get it.
Yeah. Yeah. She's out. Yeah. So.
You took her for a while and that's enough.
We had to say no more.
Yeah. So.
Fair. Totally fair.
Sarah D. Bundon. Between the pilot and the second episode, this show replaced the chief executive officer, the head doctor, and the station's telepath.
The big three.
Deep Space Nine?
Yeah, that's a decent guess.
That's what I thought. It's not?
It's fucking not. Voyager again.
It's the other one that's like spacey space station.
Oh.
It has a number in it.
Babylon 5.
Yeah. Oh! Box Lightner!
All right, this is our last question before our first score break.
Okay.
Roughly around halfway into the game. Due to scheduling decisions, Tara.
Yep.
The first episode features Adam Schiff, even though the detectives later meet him for the first time in episode 6.
Law and Order.
Law mm-hmm. and Order is mm-hmm. correct for 2 points.
Chung.
And let's hear the scores.
Boy, this is a close game. I am in the lead with 5. CT barely behind with 3. Sarah D. Bunting has 2.
All right, Sarah, please. That means you are in.
Yes, thank God.
All right, I'm going to give you 3 and 6. I think that's fair given the score so far. So 3 for 3, 6 for sweep. So 1 point per question answered, kind of.
Good luck.
Okay.
Ancient, pop culture, or 90s?
Ancient.
Ancient.
Like me.
Here we go. All right. Well, you're not going to sweep. Classics.
Prove them wrong.
I got that cadoodle hopper question, remember?
What grammar school did Beaver Cleaver attend? Yeah.
Okay, I'm not going to sweep. Grover Cleveland High Middle School, whatever.
What if that was right?
Grant Avenue Grammar School.
That's basically the same thing.
Sitcom. What was Fred Stanford's occupation on Sanford and Son?
Garbage man.
Yeah. No. Close, but he's a junk dealer, not a garbage collector.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's right. Of course.
Drama.
Side economics.
Sorry to dishonor.
What miniseries centered around a White House maid, butler, and hairdresser? Never heard of this.
I don't know, but I want to watch it.
Same.
What miniseries centered around a White House maid, butler, and hairdresser? Got a
so
pretty good title.
To answer Desmond Pfeiffer, but I'm not going to.
It's got a very UK-ish title. I mean, it's not going to really help you, but when you hear it, you'd be like, okay.
White House Confidential? No idea.
That is called Backstairs at the White House.
Wow.
Yes.
I'm going to just do a quick YouTube search and see if that's online. Please proceed.
Kids and games, Sarah. What TV cowboy taught President Sukarno's son, Gunter, how to twirl a six-shooter? Name a TV cowboy.
The Lone Ranger.
Roy Rogers. All right, so that puts you out of contention for additional points. Tara, please give us a White House update.
Have not found it to stream. You can buy it on DVD. But here's a little info about the cast. Leslie Uggams as Lillian Rogers Parks, Louis Gossett Jr. as White House staff member Mercer, Cloris Leachman as the White House head housekeeper,
Julie Harris as Mrs. Helen Taft, Robert Vaughn as President Woodrow Wilson, and William Conrad, the fat man himself, I think, as Taft, also co-starring Paul Winfield as Emmett Rogers Sr.
Wow.
Huh. Oh my God, Harry Morgan is in this. This cast is bananas.
Keep that tab open. All right.
Leslie Nielsen's in it too. I everywhere my eye lands, something amazing happens. Okay, proceed.
All right, let's get back to the game with Christina. Your question is, in the pilot, Will is 17 and Ashley is 9, which is weird because by the next season, Will is still 17 while Ashley is 13.
That is very weird, for sure. Definitely know what show this is too, which is also really cool. Can I have a year, please?
1990 sitcom. It's got a Will and an Ashley in it.
A Will and an Ashley. An Ashley, dime a dozen, 1990. The Will is really throwing me. No, I got nothing. Passing. Bravely.
Any guesses, Will? That's Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Oh, Will.
Jesus Christ. Yeah. Unfortunately, I am no longer black, so take that away from me.
Wow.
Rough day.
You got Ellen.
I know I got Ellen. I got Stacey Dashed, let's be real.
Oh, no.
This is number 17.
Spread Eagle.
Spread Eagle.
For Sarah D. Bunting. In the pilot, the male lead is driving a different car than the one he later smashes. His hair is shorter, and he doesn't have his famous sideburns.
Beverly Hills, 90210?
Yes. That is good for two. Tara?
Yes.
In the pilot, the all-male gang meets at Pete's Luncheonette, where there's a wise quacking? Quack, quack. Wise-cracking waitress. They never return there.
Yeah. This is what I was waiting for, and I'm glad I got it. And that waitress is played by, hey, it's that guy Lee Garlington, Seinfeld.
Seinfeld, yes.
Also The Voice, allegedly.
This is question 19. To Christina. In the pilot, the main guy's sycophantic sidekick is clearly intended to be African American. The artist changed this immediately thereafter. And just to situate you in time, Seinfeld was 1989.
Great year. I was born that year. That's cool.
It should be one of your first memories.
Yeah, no, for sure. Definitely.
Formative.
You're like, formative. What?
give me a year just for fun. I'm not going to get it, but let's try.
Like Seinfeld, it is 89. It is an animated sitcom.
Yes, I did. Glock that was animated. No, this is not happening today.
Animated show, late 80s, early 90s. Just want to throw something out there.
You could tell me that there were shows in the 80s and 90s that were animated. I believe you. I would know a name of one.
I bet you would, but okay.
I bet you would too.
This is a show that's still going on. So that is The Simpsons. That's Mr. Smithers.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Sarah.
A show.
Lots of good hints in this one. This is almost a gimme.
Thank you for mentioning it.
Maybe. If you don't get it, it's on you, but I'm saying it's gimme. The pilot mentions that the Ferengi are known for eating sentient beings, which would be shocking news eventually to Quark on a different show. I just added that last part in for you.
Oh, okay.
The pilot mentions that Ferengis are known for eating sentient beings, which never really happens later on in any of things.
And it's pre or is 89.
89.
Yeah.
Next Generation?
Degrassi?
Star Trek, colon.
Correct.
Yes!
From 1987. That
good job,
is
Sarah.
Star Trek, The Next Generation.
Ugh.
Tara.
Yeah.
The women have a gay houseboy named Coco for some reason.
Golden Girls.
Yes, 1985 sitcom,
my God,
Golden Girls.
I forgot about that.
Wow.
All right, guys, we're really going back in time now. I don't want to, like, that was 85. I'm just saying we may not be in the 80s anymore. Christina.
Oh, good.
Originally, the lead character was the head of a Chicago apartment complex's action board because the writers thought his 9-to-5 practice wouldn't provide enough storylines.
Mm.
I'm gonna give you a little more hint. When you ask for a hint, okay. I'm gonna give you more stuff.
Why,
okay?
Then why don't you give me some more stuff, Dave?
All right.
Dave, don't forget you have steel meals you could be giving out too.
I know. What are the scores right now?
The scores right now. CT has 3, Sarah has 6, I have 9.
Yeah, okay.
CT the flop, my God.
All right. This is a sitcom from the year I was born, 1972. Gasp. And it is eponymously titled. And this person would later have another sitcom that was just his last name.
Yeah, I don't have it, team. I don't know. It's the 70s.
You're very young.
Thank you. Thank you.
That is the Bob Newhart Show from 1972.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, look, this is TV so old that we listen to it on the radio. It's fine. We're not going
to
know these.
It's just an honor to be here. Be an honor to be nominated with the team, hanging, vibing with my pals.
Not Ellen, though.
No.
She's out.
Nope. Famously, no.
Sarah DiBenedict.
Yeah.
In the pilot, and only in the pilot, there is a piano in the living room, though neither Fred nor Lamont actually play it.
Oh. Sanford and Son?
Sanford and Son, also from 72.
Nice.
Vengeance is mine.
Tara.
Yeah.
In the pilot, the Toon main character's famous distillery is smaller and in the back of the tent.
Smaller and in the back of the tent, title of my sex tape. their famous distillery in a tent. I mean, I have to go for it, and I'm going to guess the Beverly Hillbillies?
Incorrect.
Steel Meal?
Steel Meal from Sarah.
MASH?
Yes, MASH.
Sarah!
Correct.
Sarah pulls into the lead.
All right.
Go off.
Everybody has one question left.
Oh, shit.
Oh, fuck.
Oh, yeah. Could be my great return.
Could be. You don't know what Dave's going to do.
So you're out of Steel Meals, right, Sarah?
Yeah.
Correct.
I'm going to give you one. How about
that? Hey!
Thank you. I'll take it.
Christina.
Mm-hmm.
If you judged this show by its second pilot, you might think that the victims get murdered immediately instead of at the end of Act 1. If you judge it by its first pilot, you might expect the detective to wear hush puppies. Good luck. I mean, it's a well-known show, but also good luck.
Detective shows from that time.
Yeah. Had 2 pilots over its lifespan.
Over its lifespan. Columbo.
Fuck!
What?
All right.
He's a winner. Put it on my tombstone.
Just one more thing, Christina.
Sarah. During Red Alert, you can see a shot of crewmen wearing turtleneck-style costumes abandoned by production time. This is also one of the only episodes where female crew members wear pants. And this has got to be at or older than 71 when Columbo won. So during a Red Alert, you can see a shot of a crewman wearing turtleneck-style costumes abandoned by production time. Also one of the only episodes where female crew members wear pants. Before that, they were just Porky Pig in it.
Just a little bit.
Just a little bit.
That's inappropriate. I hope that space is on my side once again in Star Trek, the original series.
Yes.
Yay!
That means Tara has to get this at a 2-point to...
No, there's no way I can win. Sarah has 12 points now. I have 9. Sarah.
Hee hee. Okay.
It's our victory.
Jeez.
Hey, I don't want to win this one either. I don't want to write another game time next week.
Oh, I see.
I did not throw it. You know I play hard. I'm just saying I'm not mad at this outcome. Great job, Sarah. Let's give me my last question. Let's end this.
Thank you.
Tara.
Yeah.
In the pilot, the girls have a cat named Fluffy whose presence disrupts the wedding reception. It never appears again. What happened to Fluffy?
The Brady Bunch.
The Brady Bunch is good for 2, but it ain't enough.
Mm-mm. Yes, famously, I have won this game. We all know it. It's just Just say it now.
We all know Christina won, but before we declare the official winner, let us just do this tiebreaker for our future steel mail. First person to shout out the answer wins. In the pilot, the bear rug does not roar when it gets stepped on, even though this would later be mined for comedy gold over and over again.
Adam's Family.
Adam's Family is correct. Tara now has 1 jillion steel meals, but today belongs to you.
Sarah.
Congratulations, Sarah.
Thank you. Nicely done.
I mean, thank you, Spitz. Christina, nicely done. Two winners today somehow.
Correct winner. History will remember me.
Look, there's a mathematical winner and there's a moral winner, and we all know who is who.
Yeah.
Some might say it's a battle for the soul of the universe.
Well, guys, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We got up early to talk about the second season of The Morning Show before going around the dial with stops at The Premise, Doogie Kama Aloha MD, Sex Education, and Law & Order SVU. Tara sang the praises of the other two's very recent Chase Gets Baptized, and it was good. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Sarah was a winner of this week's Game Time from David. Next up, Michael Sheen chews his way through the Roman Empire on Extra Extra Hot Great. And on the next EHG Prime, it is La Brea. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
Mykonos, how look?
Sarah D. Bunting.
They kind of just let us do whatever.
And Christina Tucker.
I don't want to talk about Mitch.
Thanks for listening, everybody. And we'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Great.
I'm going to go on Grindr.
And I'm going to go talk to women.